The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am your host, Chris Filico, the Italian Stallion, a little bit under the weather, but here nonetheless, joined by my co-hosts, Juan Liriano, the Vibes Guy, and Positive Terry Cushman. Gents, yesterday was a wild one. We still won the series, but we lost the game, and we maybe even lost the war with the fans because Wilson Contreras just can't. He can't stop getting into it, whether it's the other team's pitcher or our own fans. What did you think about him now joining with our fans as he was exiting the field and going into the dugout after we lost that game?
I think he's got to be better than that. He's looked at as one of the leaders of this team here. I mean, he's producing, right? Far more than what we expected this season, at least. But this team needs a captain. A bunch of unproven players, a whole bunch of utility players. He needs to step up here. He needs to just ignore the fans. And I know he said, well, you know, there's a lot going on. You know, it's baseball, but come on, man. Like, just ignore the noise. If that's what you believe, right? He said that he wasn't going to run out. He doesn't want to get hurt. I understand that. Just don't go at it with the fans. Let them be emotional. Fans are emotional. Let them say what they want. Just walk right into the dugout. But instead, he's an emotional player. So I'm not going to go crazy about it because that's who he is. As long as he produces and he's locked in, I don't care too much about, you know, the emotional side of things. I just hope that he just continues to produce and doesn't affect the way that he plays on the field. That's at least how I feel about it.
Terry?
It just seems like the clubhouse has an extreme lack of emotional stability when it comes to things. And, you know, we've seen it before in the past, but who is the leader of this team? Who is it?
I mean, it's seemingly Wilson Contreras. At least that's what we hear at face value.
I mean, you know, at the beginning of the season, maybe it was Trevor Story. I mean, he was the one front and center a lot and the veteran they could lean on despite any frustrations we may have had with him. And, you know, he kind of goes away and Wilson steps up from a performance standpoint, probably is your best player outside of Rafaela. I don't know. It depends on the day, which one I think is better than the other. But, you know, but you need Wilson to be the calm leader. I hate to keep going back to this one season, but could you imagine Wilson Contreras in October 2004 having temper tantrums when we're down 3-0 to the New York Yankees? Is that the team that's going to make history, you know, with those types of meltdowns? I don't think so. I don't really want to see that from Wilson Contreras. And, you know, earlier in the season, I didn't like how he spiked David Hamilton on that slide into second base after he was hit by a pitch during the at-bat that got him on base. And so you're just kind of up and down with him. And you just want a team that's just calmly locked in. We've got stuff to address, you know, and that's beyond Wilson's control. But we don't need these types of meltdowns and, you know, and so it's just not a good look for a team that's trying to maintain a bit of a buffer between, you know, the next wild card team.
Yeah. I don't like the look at all. To me, once it starts getting into a place where you get into fights with fans, it's just like you got to know when to draw the line, especially as a professional player. I'm not a professional athlete, so it's easy for me to say from the fan side of things, but at the end of the day, they have a general responsibility. This is their profession. They get paid a lot of money to play a sport where, let's be honest, if they fail 70% of the time, they go to the Hall of Fame, right? So I don't like the look. It's gone on for too long, the bickering back and forth. Like, I don't mind if Wilson Contreras just wants to, you know, give, you know, some jawing back and forth to a pitcher when they hit him and whatever the situation is, that's fine. Especially when you're out there and you're hitting home runs and you're playing well like he was in the beginning of the season. Once it starts bleeding into fist fights and now there's benches being cleared on a regular basis and then you're fighting with the fans, I draw the line there. I do think it is interesting the two moments of this has now happened, right? And I don't think it's coincidence. So let me just kind of explain this. Johnny, I know I'm hurt. Sit down. Yes. You know what? Maybe just turn off your channel. But nonetheless, if you look at the first time he got into it with a fan, was I believe it was game two of the eighth series, right? We were on this historic run, and regardless of the situation, I think he was trying to, like, he was jogging out a ball and just basically Cadillacing it down to first base. And nonetheless, the fans start booing him, right? And then he starts getting into it. We were on a generational run. Fans are passionate. We didn't ever think the streak was going to end. And I think that was the moment where fans started to realize not only is the streak going to end, but this could maybe not be the best situation, right? Fast forward, we then go on a 6-7 game losing streak. We lose three series in a row to teams that we have no business losing to. And then all of a sudden you're in a position where you could potentially sweep the Diamondbacks, get a little bit of momentum and start to feel good where you're going to get back on a little bit of momentum. All of a sudden now it seems like we're not going to win that game. The fans start jawing at him. He's drawing back. So it's two moments where Red Sox fans were frustrated, right? Different types of frustration. One where they realized a generational streak was going to end, and then a completely other where it seemed like we were going to start to get on another streak only to relinquish it again. But nonetheless, it's not an excuse. Wilson Contreras has to be better, and he has to figure it out. Do I mind that he wasn't running? If what Chad Tracy's telling us is accurate, that he's basically out there trying to put it together the best he can on a semi-bad hamstring, I totally get not hustling down to first base every single time. You got to pick your moments, obviously. Is it a bad look when you're just Cadillacing it down every single time? Sure. But at the end of the day, we are better for having his bat in this lineup more times than not. So if that's what it takes to keep him in the lineup, totally cool with it. As far as the leader component that you brought up, Terry, I think that Garrett Crochet was a big leader because even when he wasn't pitching, he was very vocal. You always saw him hanging over the railing and, you know, being that emotional piece for the team and trying to keep things together. Obviously that's not happening with him not around. What I would like to see, like, to me, who embodies the Red Sox or this iteration of the Red Sox the best is Caleb Durbin. And it's not even a question. He's a dirt dog. Guy looks like he was made to play in Boston. Got off to a really rough start, figured it out, turned it around, is playing hurt. I mean, clearly hurt. I mean, his fingers are like bent every other day like pretzels. And he's still out there sliding and doing all he can to try and help this team win. So for me, I would like to see him have a little bit more presence. If he gets an extension, I think that might be a little bit easier for him because he is playing basically on a one-year contract at this point. So Craig, lock him up. And then let's let this guy be one of the emotional leaders. He's a little bit more well-tempered, but he's able to still embody, you know, the passion that we expect as fans from Boston, but still put the play together, but keep it respectful. So that's what I have in that. Anything you guys have else with this Wilson Contreras that you want to add?
Yeah, to me, I mean, if he's playing hurt, he's still going out there. He's still producing. I want him on my team. I mean, I am a Contreras fan. The fans are going at the wrong players, in my opinion. Fine, he didn't run to first. If that means that he's not doing that because he doesn't want to get hurt, great. They should be going at Greg Weiser every time he goes out there knowing that he has a chance to blow the freaking game. That's who the fans should be booing every time that he goes out there. Not Contreras. Come on now. Contreras is our guy. He's one of the leaders, despite being emotional. He is one of the leaders of this team. He is arguably the best player on this roster. No, if he's not running because he doesn't want to get hurt, then so be it. Go ahead and bicker anytime you see Weiser go out there to blow freaking games. That's who they should be booing, not Contreras. Come on now.
I mean, just from a common sense perspective, and you guys don't know me super well personally, but I do kind of have a hair trigger temper at times. I lose my patience a little bit here and there. But I mean, common sense, if Wilson got in front of the media, and he's been nasty with the media behind the scenes, according to Sean McAdam, Wilson has been nasty with the media, not answering questions, not making himself available. Common sense, if he got in front of the media front and center and said, you know what, my hamstring's bothering me a little bit, but I feel at the end of the day, I can help at the plate and I can still be productive. And I'm just doing the best I can to try to get us to the finish line. You know, I might not be able to run as hard, but I'm going to help the team in as many other ways as I can. And I would just appreciate the patience for it, because being in this lineup is important to me. Winning is important to me. You know, doing the best I can for all these kids. I don't know if there's anybody in that lineup older than him. Story's close, but I think Wilson is literally the oldest everyday guy in that lineup. If he just conveyed all that to the media, wouldn't that turn the temperature of the fan base down after they heard that? Wouldn't a good leader know to do that?
Yeah, it's all fair points. And I don't disagree. But, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, they got to figure this out, because it's becoming more noise than it's worth, and it's now a story in itself. And it's not a story that we need for the Boston Red Sox, especially as we're getting to the most critical part of the season and trying to go, hopefully, on what could be a playoff run. So more to come with that. But speaking of emotional instability, let's talk about Jarren Duran, right? Jarren Duran hit a home run yesterday. I think he's got, 17 on the year now, which is a lot more than I thought he was going to hit this season. I didn't even think he would break 20. He's on pace now to break 20. But I think he's still batting maybe a hair over 200 at this point, if that. He has to be feeling such a ridiculous amount of pressure right now with the potential, you know, resources that we have coming up that can play in the outfield and the ones that we have at AAA, even if we decide not to, that if he continues to, you know, put up these 0 for 3s, 0 for 4s, 0 for 5s, God forbid, or 1 for 5, at some point, someone might be calling for his spot. What are your guys' thoughts of Jarren Duran as he continues to try and find himself in this Red Sox lineup?
He needs to continue to be the everyday starting left field. I mean, I mentioned in the previous episode, I want Roman Anthony to be our everyday DH, because what I care most about is his bat. That's what I need. I need Roman Anthony batting either first or second and hitting bombs. So if that means that Duran is out there playing defense and still contributing to you know, some extent, I want him in the outfield, and I want Roman Anthony DHing. That's at least the approach that I would take, because, of course, now you have the conversation of Trevor Story and this sort of platoon job that you're going to have to do in the infield with him, Monasterio, and the rest of the guys here. So at least that's the approach that I would take. I do trust Duran's defense more than I would trust Roman's defense at this point, because, of course, Roman's coming back from an injury. He's, you know, needs to get accustomed to the speed of the game at the major league level. So have him DH every day. And then, of course, you know, obviously Yoshida's no longer there, so you don't need to worry about Yoshida DHing, and just have Duran there every day. I mean, you're going to need his defense, and you're going to need his speed and his aggressiveness out there. So that's the approach that I would take with Duran at this point.
Terry?
If Duran keeps hitting at this clip, I mean, he's going to force his way into the lineup, whether it's left field or DH. I think Juan makes a lot of fair points. You know, if Anthony didn't have the yips for a couple weeks in April, you know, perhaps the conversation would be a little different, but he had the yips and he wasn't planting his feet the right way. And, you know, the ball was not on target. And we were losing games. So, I mean, if Anthony ends up being the DH, that's fine. That's a lower pressure, you know, situation for him. He can focus solely on hitting. He is torching it right now in AAA. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. I think more likely than not, you are better with Roman Anthony in your lineup. I just worry. I mean, there is part of me though that worries. Well, he, you know, yeah, he's crushing it down there, but you know, he's coming into a hostile situation. You know, fans are jawing at the players. We're trying to keep our wild card spot. You know, if we go backwards here, I mean, there are some teams that can capitalize, and we're on the outside looking in. I know Sonny Gray's pitching in this Marlins series, but I know a couple guys that are not that you would rather have. So, you know, so Anthony definitely improves the team. I'm just, you know, maybe I'm just full of sour grapes, but, you know, isn't it convenient that Duran's hitting magically, you know, having probably one of the best runs of the season only when his job might be threatened? And the only reason he has a job here on the Boston Red Sox is because nobody wanted him 2 or 3 weeks ago. He was worthless, basically. So he kept him. You're probably better keeping him than getting a bag of baseballs. But then when you look at the clubhouse attitude, I'm not even sure that's true. I mean, what does Duran not being on the team, period, having Anthony left and Christian Campbell at DH, does that sound appealing to me? Yeah, a little bit. But I think we're stuck right now with Duran. You know, he's only a half a day away from having his own meltdown in front of a group of fans. And it's just, I worry about the clubhouse culture of this team and how it affects them on the field.
So I think with Campbell and Anthony, I would probably flip that, Terry. I would probably prefer Campbell in the outfield and still have Anthony hitting, but doesn't matter. Let me ask you a question before I give my take. As far as with Duran, do you think he's the type of player, forget about the fans, because I think the fans actually rally more around a Duran than they do a Contreras, as far as like the Boston fans. Do you think that the team does, though? Like, do you think that from a culture standpoint that the team relates more to a Duran or a Wilson Contreras?
I think from a performance standpoint, Wilson is always going to figure it out. Duran's struggling mightily to figure it out. And he hasn't quite done it consistently this year. Hopefully now he will. But I don't know. I guess to answer the question,
from like a support standpoint,
from what?
From more of like a support standpoint. Like for me, and I don't know, I don't have anything to factually base this off of, but I just get the sense that like the team rallies around Duran when he's struggling, whereas like Contreras, when he's got this nonsense going on, like they just kind of tune it out, but they're not necessarily there to put their hands on his shoulder, if you know what I'm saying.
But I think it's the mental health aspect with Jaron Duran, at least a big reason why the team would rally behind him compared to Contreras, because Contreras is more the emotions. He can't get a hold of his emotions. And I think it'd be easier for the team to rally around Duran in this because of, you know, so I think it's easier for them to rally around Duran, despite the performance being, you know, at such different levels between Duran and Contreras. I mean, Contreras is having an exceptional year compared to Duran. So, yeah, I think they'll rally behind Duran because of that factor, the mental health factor.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, the fact that he genuinely seems like he needs the support more. And even though Contreras like gets into it, like he definitely seems like he can just kind of handle things on his own. A lot of his stuff is somewhat self-inflicted, although you can make the same argument for Duran, but there's other factors and context to it. I think with Jaron Duran, yeah, it is interesting, Terry, that as soon as his job is on the line, all of a sudden he starts to seemingly figure it out, quote unquote. I mean, which isn't a bad problem to have, because I think the more options that we have, especially with, you know, the limited resources that we will have as we bring in some people, going forward is never a bad thing. For me, I'm keeping Jaron Duran in the field. two reasons. I think he's just, I don't think he's a great fielder. I think he's a better fielder than Roman Anthony. And I don't think anyone could make that argument. I think between the two of them, you've got, you know, basically one arm, one elbow on Duran, and then two elbows on Roman Anthony. Thank you, Jeremy. But the reality is I think from even the, you know, injury standpoint, right? Like at this point, Roman Anthony, you could argue the guy's like Mr. Glass at this point. He's always getting hurt, which was the concern that we had with Marcelo Meyer. And I think putting Roman Anthony in the field when he's not like, if he was Sadon Rafaela or, you know, Abreu, and you're expecting a gold glove out of him, fine, you risk it. He's nowhere near that level. So why put him in a position where he's got to do more that he can get hurt? I mean, the guy gets hurt picking up a baseball bat. You think putting him out in the field and chasing down balls, diving for balls, sliding for balls, he's not going to get hurt, especially as baseball games start to intensify and the games become more meaningful. So to me, if you're counting on the bat and that's really what we need him for, just let him bat. And if he gets hurt swinging the bat, you know, we've been there before. We'll figure it out. And you have Christian Campbell as an additional resource if things go sideways with Duran at this point. That's how I would play it. You guys have any other takes on that?
Yeah, you know, so I think Roman Anthony is probably smart enough to know that, you know, the optics are maybe he lacks toughness. Maybe he just can't be relied on for 162. And ideally, that should bother him. He should be bothered by that. So, you know, it sounds like this injury probably unavoidable, and it was serious, and it is what it is. You know, sometimes I wonder, you know, could he be the first baseman of the future? Do you try to turn him into a Matt Olson type guy and put him at first base? You got probably, well, you're going to miss all next year, and then you've got a team option for $17.5 million on Wilson Contreras for 2028. So I don't know. You've also got this kid named Justin Gonzalez. I'm giving a rare prospect take here. Down in, I think he just got promoted to double A. I think he's a first baseman, power hitting guy. So I don't know. I really don't know what his future is, if it's realistic that he slots in. I don't even know if he's a righty or lefty, but yeah, I don't know. So I don't know if there's someone in the pipeline that's going to be the first baseman or if that's a potential future free agent spot. I don't know, but I think for now, the plan for Roman Anthony, being that he's 22 or so years old, probably going to be in the field. I can't see like a DH tag being slapped on him, unfortunately. It probably it could very well for 2026, but just not long term. So, you know, that's one thing. Just to pivot real quickly. Imagine if we got Ketel Marte. What would that clubhouse be like? You'd have like a Mount Rushmore of guys that just can't handle life. You could probably find a fourth guy to put on there. I don't know who it would be. Somebody must have meltdowns in that clubhouse. Probably a pitcher. I don't know who it would be. You could put Bayo on there if you desperately had to. And that hurts my heart because I defend Bayo all the time. But yeah, like just imagine them. And nobody knows as of this very hour what the deal is with Ketel Marte. He got on the plane and he flew all the way across the country and then didn't show up to the ballpark. We're told by some sources, you know, one of them, Torrey Lavelle, it's a personal matter. We're told by, I think, team officials, he's going to have an MRI on his knee, which that was 2 days ago. No follow-ups on that. So it just sounded like that was something to throw out there. You know, I mean, it's probably bad form for the media, for the credentialed media to call bullshit on the knee MRI. We could do it all day long. In fact, you know, it's one of my favorite things. But I just imagine that guy. He can't handle Arizona. Low pressure, small market Arizona can't handle it. How would he handle the fans getting in his face? So just imagine the bullet we dodged there.
This is hard for me because I'm pro Ketel Marte. I'm from DR. I wanted Ketel Marte here during the offseason. I think that he could have helped this team, especially even now. I think everything, you really have to look at it for what it is in Arizona. I don't think the situation would have been the same here in Boston. I think being around guys like Wilson Contreras, being around guys that want to win. I don't know much about Arizona and their team, but I know about Boston. I know there's a lot of guys here that play hard, that play to win, and him being in that environment could probably switch things up. He's not hurt. We all know that. He's doing this because he doesn't want to play for Arizona. That's really what this is. I mean, he traveled with the team, as you mentioned, Terry. And then I think we were asking for reasons of like, yo, what's going on? 24 hours later, we get the news that he's getting an MRI. That's bull crap. We know that he's not hurt. He just doesn't want to play for the team. I don't know how this is going to play out. And I saw something on social media that he liked the post. The caption was, Ketel Marte no longer wants to play with Arizona, and he liked it on IG. So I think that's what this is about here. He doesn't want to play for the team, and he's trying to force his way out somehow. That's what superstar players do when they don't want to play for a franchise. They'll force their way out through social media, and that's what he's doing, and not showing up. But I'd still want Ketel Marte on this team.
Well, a couple of things. It's not his first no-show. He did this last year, and that was coming off of a World Series appearance year. And number two, coming into the series, they were in second place in the National League West and had possession of that third wildcard spot. So I don't care what he wants or who he wants to play for. Those are the worst optics I've ever seen. Because him walking out on that team ends everything for every single player on that team. All right. I'm just going to say it. If you're going to be a selfish motherfucker, stay the fuck away from Boston.
Yeah. Terry's getting aggressive. My gosh. Oh my God. Charlie's swear jar is going to be full.
I can't. I went off on David Price the whole time he was here. I just couldn't stand that guy. As we know privately.
No, listen, it's all fair. And the truth is, like, I could understand why people would still want Ketel Marte from a talent perspective. I would want nothing to do with him at all. Like, I got on Rafael Devers, and, like, this is so much worse of a look than Rafael Devers. Like, I think the Rafael Devers situation got magnified to a point, and the media blew it out of control. And I think that's also the difference between playing in Arizona versus Boston. But it's interesting. Like, you saw the GM of the Diamondbacks was basically like, even this morning, was doubling down. Like, we have no idea, like, where in the world is Ketel Marte? Like, he's like, where's Waldo at this point? And the owner and CEO of the Diamondbacks today basically said, and I quote, "We're going to have to get explanations and apologies from Ketel." So, I mean, when the owner and CEO are coming out there, it's absolutely ridiculous at this point. It's a terrible look. It's evident that he doesn't want to be playing for the Diamondbacks. Totally understand why he doesn't want to be there, whatever. It's interesting that he chose to not show up to Boston. And this is my theory and a little bit of conspiracy here. The reason why he did this with Boston is because I truly believe that Boston was the closest to getting Ketel Marte. And he wanted to slice. And he's like, I'm not even going to come to your city. What held up this deal was Marcelo Meyer. That's why I'm not in Boston. And you traded him for a freaking reliever. Granted, he's been good, the reliever, but you trade him for a reliever, but you won't trade him to the Diamondbacks so that I can come play for your team. I'm not even coming to Boston. And I get it. I get why he would, quote unquote, slight his team, slight us all in the same time. But it's a ridiculous look. Good luck to the Diamondbacks. Good luck to Ketel Marte. They got to figure that one out. I'm glad we're not involved in it. Any other takes on this?
Why can't Ketel Marte, why can't he just simply say, I'm sick of being in this situation. I'm sick of barely keeping my head above water. Why can't he say that to the media? And perhaps the team will respond. Paul Skeens didn't quite do it that way, but he's like, I'd like to play for the Yankees someday. And then a slew of moves happened and they almost got Kyle Schwarber.
I mean, but it's rare, though. It's rare to see guys with his talent being honest with the media because they don't have this good relationship with the media. I don't think he would ever do that. I think this is what superstar players do. They go behind the curtain. They'll go to the media. They'll like a post. That's how they send their message. That's how they do it. So, I mean, I'm not surprised here. He is expected to be back with the team, according to the GM. They placed him on a 10-day DL, and then he's expected to be back. So we'll see how he comes back, how he plays, and if he addresses this with the media at some point. But I'd still want him on my team. I'll be alone on that one.
That's okay. I love Devers. You know, we're good.
Yeah, you guys could both sit on those islands alone. it's an interesting point, Terry. I do think, and to your point, Juan, I think it is less frequent in the MLB that you see players coming out and just asking for trades. It's not like the NBA, they're not only asking for trades, they're telling you where they're going. Like, hey, I don't want to play for you, and I'm also going to go play for this team. So, like, when's my flight? And then you have, like, the NFL is probably somewhere in between. Baseball, a little bit more passive-aggressive with it, and then NHL players would die for their team and never ask for a trade. So you've got a complete different array when you go from sport to sport. But nonetheless, let's shift gears here a little bit.
Well, I got one more, right, sort of. Yeah. We've been up and down, probably more so up than down recently. If Torey Lovello became available, do we choose him over Chad Tracy?
No, I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't.
I could argue on paper that the Diamondbacks, when healthy, are a better team and they have a worse record. And yes, I realize the division that they play in, but like we play in a pretty good division too that kicks the crap out of each other a lot more often. I mean, the Dodgers as of recent have been a powerhouse, but I could argue the rest of that division is underachieved in the midst of the Dodgers' resurgence in the last half decade. Torey Lovello is a good manager. I'm not debating that. I still think, based on what Chad Tracy has shown me in the limited sample size, that there might potentially be more upside. Like, I always like the hope factor. Whereas with Torey, I mean, Lovello would give me hope if we still had Cora, because I was never a Cora guy. But I like so far what I've seen from Chad Tracy, that I would still rather stick that out and see it through.
Well, we don't know how this season's going to end yet.
Well, like everything else, Terry, I reserve the right to change my opinion.
Yeah. So Lovello's been to a World Series. He has. That was against the Rangers, I assume. Yes, against the
Rangers. Yeah, they were like an 85-win team, too. I mean, they went on like a miracle run. Like, if we thought the 2021 Red Sox were a miracle, that was like 1980 miracle on ice with the Diamondbacks did.
Right. So, but nonetheless, he did go there. He has had a deep October with the Diamondbacks. Bench coach in Boston for 3 or 4 years, interim manager, and had a great run in those 2 months as the interim manager with a far worse team than he's ever managed anywhere. Like, that team was bad. Joe Kelly was a starting pitcher, if that puts that into perspective. That's all attractive to me. I think his voice would command more respect than a guy like Chad Tracy's. Like, I mean, we just talked about all the chaos going on. Who's more likely to rein in some of these guys? Chad Tracy or a Torey Lovello type guy? If you're targeting a veteran manager, I think Lovello checks off all the boxes. I don't think this team is worse.
No, that's a fair point. For me, it's just giving credit to Chad Tracy. We were at a point in the season where we kind of thought that we were headed to 100 losses, and he's led the way to turning this thing around. He's been the whisperer for some of these players. He's known how to communicate with these players. So that's just me giving credit to Chad Tracy and the job that he's done, where we're at the point, and some people are even having the discussion of him being the manager of the year. Like, that's the job that Chad Tracy has done. So that's just credit to Chad Tracy. Of course, not taking anything away from Lovello, but I just want to give credit to Tracy for the job that he's done. Being placed in a position where all hope was lost, he put the pieces together with what we had before the trade deadline. And we thought the trade deadline was kind of wacky for us anyways. And he's led the way up until this point. I'm going to give him his flowers. And I'd stick with Chad Tracy up, at least for now, and see what he can do if we have a season next year in a full season Obviously, having the expectations of having to compete. So I'd stick with him.
Yeah, I think to take it a step further, when I look at like Lovello, he's probably more like a poor man's Terry Francona than Chad Tracy will ever be, right? I think Chad Tracy, interestingly enough, is more like Alex Cora, who I couldn't stand. But he's doing everything that we were told Alex Cora was doing with our team, right? Like, oh, he's a player's manager, but like he's going to change and he's, you know, he's not rigid. And he proved to be the exact opposite. He never changed his style of play. He never changed a lineup. He was just doing dumb things. Chad Tracy took over a team that was like 17-35 or whatever, was something close to that, and is now in the running, as you said, Juan, for manager of the year, against a manager who took a generationally bad White Sox team and turned them into a first-place ball club. So, I mean, he deserves his flowers, and he also deserves a ton of credit to at least get the opportunity to see that through, in my opinion. Now, granted, we can go into the playoffs and absolutely look lost, and they could just look hopeless and out of sorts and not know what they're doing. I stand corrected. They were 10-17. Thank you for whoever corrected me. I knew there was a 17 somewhere in there, but nonetheless, yeah, we could look lost and he has no control and the emotions going like, all right, this guy in the big moment can't handle it. And I could see, Terry, where you would think that that might be a reality. The good news is we get to at least see how that's going to play out before we have to make a decision on Lovello if he becomes available. And if Chad Tracy does half of what he's done in the regular season in the playoffs with this team, considering the team that he has, it's worth riding it out, in my opinion.
My internet's cutting out, but I'm good. I'm pro Lovello. Just put me in that camp.
All right. So we're going to end it here on this last subject here. Devers. Terry knew it was coming. Favorite player ever. He's got his Devers pajamas ready for this weekend, everyone. Footy pajamas. I don't know what color they're going to be, but hopefully the Red Sox one. Nonetheless, there's been a lot of discussion as to, number one, is there going to be like a video played for Devers and from the team? That's one aspect. And then two, what is the fan reception going to be from Boston to Rafael Devers, considering how everything broke apart in the end? What do you guys think?
I mean, the idea that they're going to boo him, I mean, it's not his fault. And I'm going to die on this hill. This was not his fault that things didn't work out. I mean, I'm supportive of Craig Breslow now because I think that, you know, he kind of put some pieces that at the beginning didn't seem like they were working well. And up until now, they have been working well. But his communication with Devers was just terrible. So none of what happened with Devers was Devers' fault. This was on Craig Breslow. He failed to communicate properly with Devers. Devers deserves an ovation. I mean, at least for me, I've been watching the Red Sox since the early 2000s. In that late 2010s and in the 2020s, he was our guy. He was our superstar player of the 2020s after getting rid of Mookie Betts. So he contributed to this team. Things didn't work out at the end. Doesn't mean that he doesn't deserve a standing ovation. I hope he doesn't get booed. That'll just kind of look whack as a fan base if we do that, because we know that it wasn't his fault.
Here.
Normally, I wouldn't say it this way, but since I already dropped some bombs, I think he's going to bring some fuck you energy into Boston. I think minimum probably two home runs in the three-game series. I thought we were playing Miami this weekend. We're playing them after the weekend in the following series. But I just think that's what it's going to be. I don't know what the fan reception is going to be. It's been an emotional year. Nobody knows where to assign blame. People love to point out the Giants have sucked with Devers. I'll argue it's a terrible park. Chapman's the third baseman. Adames is the shortstop. Two high strikeout guys. I mean, I don't think that was a situation where he could win. The Padres wanted him, and that was intriguing to me. I was like, wow, that would be how fired up would he be to play with Tatis, Manny Machado, Jackson Merrill? Like, that would have been good, and it's a much better ballpark, but we're not getting that. But one ballpark he can hit in is Fenway Park, and he knows Breslow will be up in that owner's box, and I think he'd love to single-handedly win that series for the Giants. I think that's his agenda this weekend. I think the fan base will probably be, the majority will give him a positive reception.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm obviously not the biggest Devers guy, but I think he deserves an applause. I mean, what he did when he was in Boston, regardless of how things ended, he deserves a standing ovation. I mean, he's a World Series champion with the club. I mean, hit a ton of home runs for us, big home runs. So he deserves it. I think the fans, I would say it's probably going to be 75 to maybe 80%, I think, applause. I think you're always going to get boo birds. Like, anytime someone leaves emotionally, whether it's the Mookie Betts with the contract or even how things ended, like, you're just going to get people that boo. Do I think that, like, the situation was his fault? No. Where I think I would disagree a little bit with Juan is, like, he is an adult and communication is a two-way street. He could have handled himself a lot better with how that went. I think, you know, yeah, Craig Breslow probably lied and stuff like that, but he did act very childish. And I'll just kind of leave it at that. But by no means does that warrant him being booed by the fans. I think, though, to your point, Terry, if he comes in with an F you attitude and he's like that, even with his demeanor towards the fans and when he's in the batter's box and just his approach, things could go sideways with him with the fans, especially if he does well. It's definitely a possibility he could hit two or three bombs in this series. It's also a possibility he could have 12 strikeouts. So, I mean, who knows what we're going to see. He might have FU energy. The truth is we are better than the Giants, which means I'm almost certainly picking the Giants because we can't beat teams that we're better than. So, but that's only much is my, I got to say about that.
It's not as favorable of a series as the previous one. You know, the previous one, they trotted out Jackson Merrill, who was 38 years old, or I said Jackson Merrill, Merrill Kelly, my bad. And then they had a terrible, who was the first starter? I don't even remember who it was. It was someone awful. So the first two games were on the table, and why didn't they win the Toley start, you know? And, so, but then you look at this series, you've got Logan Webb. I forget his first name, that Tidwell kid, which is a kind of an even matchup, with us. And then you've got TBA versus Jake Bennett. TBA sounds pretty good against a guy like Bennett. So I think there's probably two out of three there for the Giants. And Devers is known to sit on off speed. That was kind of the knock on him. He'd kind of get lazy and he would just wait for the off speed, and they'd blow him away with fastballs for a week until it became a narrative. Then he would crush the fastballs finally. But I think Sonny Gray is probably a good matchup for Devers.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, the only thing that you could hold your hat on is the fact that the Giants do have Devers, and since they got him, they've gotten worse. Just kidding, Terry. But no, I mean, I can't disagree. And again, I just right now, I don't like the Red Sox against teams that they should beat, regardless who goes out there. Like, the Red Sox are clearly a better team than the Giants. I understand that series are all based off of matchups, but like you said, you've got one that's pretty even, one that we have the advantage, and then TBA right now does look probably better than Jake Bennett. But I mean, Bennett's also due, just like Toley was due to have a bad start. I mean, because we won like seven games in a row that he started. Bennett's due to like get out of his funk. And if he can't do it against the Giants, then we're going to be having a different conversation after that series. Anything else on the Rafael Devers?
No. More on the game. I mean, because of the missing pieces in the bullpen, the offense is going to have to come up big, put up some numbers here. I mean, I trust Gray to go out there and allow no more than 2 to 3 runs. Obviously, Sandoval and Bennett have been shaky, so I need to see them kind of recover from their last performances. But the key is going to be the offense. Can the offense continue to put up runs? That bullpen right now without Whitlock and Slayton, they need some time to rest. So that's going to be the key for this weekend. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Devers to perform because of that factor that you guys are mentioning. He kind of wants to have that FU attitude with Craig Breslow. That can get to him and kind of play around with his own game. So I hope that's not the approach that he's taking. There's going to be a lot of pressure on him. I don't think he's going to be able to perform to the level that he wants because of that pressure.
Yeah, it's Logan Webb versus Sonny Gray, Blade Tidwell versus Patrick Sandoval, TBA versus Jake Bennett. That could be ugly. If you want the good news, you're going to have Bayo, Tolley, and Gray in the Miami series. So, you know, that's a good series how it lines up. I don't know what the order is or who's going to pitch the first inning for Bayo, but generally you're going to have Bayo handling the bulk of those. So I don't know. It's a roller coaster season, and the roller coaster ride, you know, is far from over.
Is that all you gents got?
That's it.
All right, well, then I'll end it here. Worst return, the Devers trade or Jaylen Brown? It's the Devers trade, and it's not even close. We don't even have anyone on the team anymore that's from the Devers trade, number one. Number two, I promise you, Celtics fans, as much as it seems like it hurts, the Celtics long-term will be better without Jaylen Brown. Sorry to say it. It's the reality. It's going to happen. Just have a little bit of faith. I trust Brad Stevens. I do not trust anyone right now with the Boston Red Sox, including myself. And that is all that we have for you. We have been the Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball.